is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to PuckCast, a weekly audio dialogue between Pakistan and the West. We're podcasting from Redmond, Washington, USA on May 22nd, 2007. This is Volume 3, Installment 14 of PuckCast. I'm Ethan Casey, author of Alive and Well in Pakistan.
And I am Nasser Aziz, producer of PuckCast.
And with us, as always, is Asad Faizi.
Hello.
And with us, as not so always, is Shahab Ahmed.
Hey.
Shahab is a special guest. He's been with us once before, and welcome back.
Thank you.
And he's going to be on the hot seat later this evening. Later
throughout the evening.
starting right now. We're going to, before we start talking about events in Karachi and the MQM, which was the main topic for this podcast, we have a couple of other items. One is a May 19th New York Times article that that I thought we should discuss for a few minutes, and then Asad has another topic. One is a New York Times article that was published on May 19th with the headline, U.S. Pays Pakistan to Fight Terror But Patrols Ebb. I'm going to read the first few paragraphs of that. It's datelined Washington, May 19th. The United States is continuing to make large payments of roughly $1 billion a year to Pakistan for what it calls reimbursements to the country's military for conducting counterterrorism efforts along the border with Afghanistan, even though Pakistan's president decided 8 months ago to slash patrols through the area where Al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters are most active. The monthly payments, called coalition support funds, are not widely advertised. Buried in public budget numbers, the payments are intended to reimburse Pakistan's military for the cost of the operations. So far, Pakistan has received more than $5.6 billion, billion with a B, dollars under the program over 5 years, more than half of the total aid the United States has sent to the country since the September 11, 2001 attacks, not counting overt covert funds. Some American military officials in the region have recommended that the money be tied to Pakistan's performance in pursuing Al-Qaeda and keeping the Taliban from gaining a haven from which to attack the government of Afghanistan. American officials have been surprised by the speed at which both organizations have gained strength in the past year. But Bush administration officials say no such plan is being considered, despite new evidence that the Pakistani military is often looking the other way when Taliban fighters retreat across the border into Pakistan, ignoring calls from American spotters to intercept them. There is also at least one American report that Pakistani security forces have fired in support of Taliban fighters attacking Afghan posts. That's an allegation, an American allegation, that Pakistan military is actually, at least in some cases, supporting the Taliban actively with firepower. The administration, according to some current and former officials, is fearful of cutting off the cash or linking it to performance for fear of further destabilizing Pakistan's president, General Pervez Musharraf, who is facing the biggest challenges to his rule since he took power in 1999. So what do you guys have to say about that?
New York Times is a establishment mouthpiece, not unlike Pravda, used to be the Soviet Union's mouthpiece. They're basically, every time establishment wants to put some pressure on Pakistan, they use New York Times and Washington Post to start writing these articles. What this tells me is that they have something in mind. They want Pakistan to do more. They want Pakistan to engage their troops more actively fighting against Al-Qaeda, because U.S. is really tiring, and there's mounting pressure in U.S., domestic pressure in U.S. to withdraw the troops, and nobody else in the world is willing to go and get their citizens killed for George Bush. So they want Pakistan to engage more in Afghanistan. You know, we all know very well that U.S. has been paying $10 billion a year to Israel for the last 50 years or so, and all Israel has done for U.S. is create more terrorists. Pakistan Army has been the only force in the world who's been really fighting and killing Al-Qaeda and Taliban, and that's pretty evident to anybody who knows the region.
Shahab, you were saying a minute ago off the air, you made an interesting comparison. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah, so I think if I look at myself as a U.S. citizen and a U.S. taxpayer, I think I want to hold my government accountable for how they're spending my tax money. And I think if the government is asking, holding Pakistan accountable for the specific military aid that they're giving to them and asking them for show results, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think you have to look at it a little bit from Pakistani side as well. I think Pakistan has been battling against a very insurgent movement, which is always hard to kind of kill. Pakistan has made significant progress in some areas. For example, Pakistan has handed over probably more Al-Qaeda terrorists to U.S. and Guantanamo than any other country. I think there is some areas where Pakistan is failing in terms of the Taliban's resurgence. I think partly because Musharraf has to balance very carefully his support for the West with the realities on the ground, and the reality of the ground specifically in that area of the Pakistan that they are happen they those majority of the people in there do happen to be very right wing on the right side, do support religious extremism. So I think Musharraf could do a better job in tracking down the insurgents and hopefully taking care of some of those issues.
Now you work for a large software company based here in Redmond, Washington. Your company uses vendors.
Yeah, and the analogy that I was using is that if I'm using vendors to do some work for me, I want to make sure that I am paying them for performance, and I have certain metrics to track their performance, and I have penalty clauses when they do not perform. So that was an analogy that I'm making. Obviously, United States given funding to Pakistan is not exactly a vendor corporate kind of relationship, but I think anybody who's paying money to anybody to do anything can expect and hold them accountable.
How do you guys feel?
How much do you pay to your vendor to die for you? You know, like more Pakistani soldiers have killed in that. And by the way, this mess that you call the religious extremism in the northern part of Pakistan is the creation of US itself. For more than 15 years, the United States has been funding and fanning militancy in the northern part of Pakistan, creating a militancy to fight off Soviet Union. There is no switch that they can turn on and off when they want. It's their own creation. And what Musharraf is doing is very carefully trying to win the heart and minds of the people. Instead of U.S. only, George Bush administration only knows one answer, and that's to bomb the hell out of the civilians. And Pakistan does not want to do that. Pakistan does not want to kill their own civilians just to make George Bush happy.
There's another issue here, I think, with $1 billion plus per year to the Pakistan military shores up the position of the military in Pakistan society, which is already strong and problematic. And mm-hmm. I think that the position of the military in the society and in Pakistani politics, yeah. It's being shown at its problematic position is actually at the moment because
I'm going to come back to my point. We got to quit blaming U.S. and Europe and North America for all of our evils.
The fact of the matter is
the people that live in that area have tried are very conservative Muslims. They've tried to live in their medieval ways for hundreds of years.
What's wrong with that?
And anybody that's going to try to change that status quo is going to get that violent reaction back. Now, for Pakistan's national security, long-term interest, what we got to do is we got to take those people out of their tribal or medieval traditions and bring them into the mainstream and get them educated and get them jobs like regular Pakistani people. And until we do that, they're always going to act like a bunch of hooligans.
Are you going to bomb the Amish and community also here?
They are living in their own medieval ways.
What's wrong with living in a medieval ways? I mean, why do you have to westernize everybody in the world?
No, and I'm not talking about westernization. I'm talking about people trying to pursue a lifestyle that went extinct about 400 to 600 years ago, and we got to bring them back to the 21st
century. Why?
And we got to educate them.
Why is that your responsibility?
It's not your responsibility. It's their responsibility.
All right, before...
What I was going to say, his analogy, Shahab's analogy about the vendor, is irrelevant and it doesn't work in this case. Pakistan is not an outsourced army for U.S. So that analogy is out the door. Plus... You know, that's what that Indian journalist Siddharth was talking about, outsourcing the...
Siddharth Varadarajan, who was our guest a few weeks ago. Yeah.
But so that analogy doesn't work, you know. And as a U.S. citizen and you're paying taxes, you don't even know where your government pays the money and how it uses your tax money. You don't even know that. So to say that, oh, I would like to know, then you go ahead and ask them to give you a list of things that you spend money on. Second, I would question the source of this article.
Well, actually, in the same article, they say Pentagon says they submitted us a bill and we pay that. That's the bill. That's the gas bill.
I'm not talking about the money. I'm talking about what's happening on the ground.
Sure.
As far as killing Taliban or supporting Taliban. Who told them that? If they know all that, then, you know,
I totally agree with you. I don't agree with the premise to begin with.
So we should move on to the next.
What's happening in Islamabad?
So interestingly, we have talked about it on and off. There is a mosque with a madrasa or a religious seminary attached in the heart of Islamabad, not too far from the center of the government. It's called Lal Masjid or the Red Mosque. And for the last few months, the leaders of the seminary and the mosque has actually come out pretty strongly and declared a war against decadence, and you know, and they are demanding that the moral the morality of the country should be shaped according to their particular views, and also they want to enforce Sharia laws in the country,
sort of like Jerry Falwell.
Sort of like Jerry Falwell,
except that Jerry Falwell did not name policemen and
I was coming to that.
He didn't capture government buildings.
So they have been in the last 2-3 months. I mean, there are all kind of nutcases in Pakistan, both
apples and oranges, right? Go ahead.
You know, like there are all kind of nutcases in Pakistan. All through the spectrum, some religious right and some Western liberals, they're all extremists on both sides. But these guys have actually Shahab was alluding to earlier, has stepped the boundary, and they have actually used force against the locals, the video shops, and they've burned down the video shops. They have actually been trying to impose them, and their last escapade, really, they have kidnapped four policemen, and to this date they have two of these four policemen still in their custody.
And this is May 22nd?
Yes.
Yes, 2nd.
Yeah.
Sure, but the point is that army, so Musharraf has been there's a lot of pressure on Musharraf's government to actually crack down on them, and it's easy for Musharraf or the government to actually crack down, because if you have to understand that these militants, most of them are, they don't have sophisticated ammunition or guns and stuff like that. They have some, but not. There's no way they can stand up to a professional police and army. And that's not the point. The point Musharraf is making is that there are thousands of kids, young kids, 16, 14 year old kids, which they have brainwashed, and they're using it as. And this is, the most amazing thing. The biggest hypocrisy of these. Religious leaders or the mullahs of the Red Mosque is that they have personal guards who are equipped with the most sophisticated weapons to protect them, like two or three of the leaders, and the rest of the students, they don't have any they don't have any weapon. They basically have these sticks and chains.
So what do you want them to have weapons?
The point is that they are not even sincere to their own students, and they want to protect themselves. They are basically demagogues, and they don't really believe in any in the thing that they are even preaching themselves. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they would not be protecting themselves; they would be protecting their students. Yeah. And the choices are very difficult for Musharraf government. Actually, they cannot just crack down.
See, I think Musharraf has been too soft on this issue. Primarily to pacify the mullahs. I think, if some people want to impose Sharia some sort of a law on them on their private property with consent, they're free to do that. But the minute they kidnap policemen, the minute they capture a government building openly, challenging the writ of the state within the capital of the country, I think by not cracking down on them, Musharraf is sending a very wrong message to the country. And the message that he's sending is, as long as you got a big beard or a burqa, and you go and you go be a belligerent, I'm not going to tackle you. And that's a very wrong message he's sending to the rest of the country, because what is this is going to do is this going to embolden people that Assad referred to as crackpots, people like Taliban, other people, who's going to try to do these belligerent acts, knowing fully well that the government is not going to act against them because the government is worried about the backlash from the mullahs.
So a few months ago, when Musharraf government actually bombed the madrasa and killed a few hundred people or tens of people,
was that I think 30 or 40.
30 or 40 people, yeah. Was that a good response? Is that harsh?
I don't know about that specific incident.
Well, you have a very convenient memory, don't you?
I know.
Yes.
If that
happened right on North Iwana.
So let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. I don't remember that specific incident.
Remind him if you can.
But if there were terrorists in that madrasa that were getting trained, we should have did the right thing to bomb them and exterminate them.
I got one word.
If there were innocent students there, then he did the wrong thing and the intelligence was bad.
I got one word. Waco.
Actually, I have to. Exactly. There's a lot of similarity, but I have to make one point very clear that every segment of the society has actually come out and have condemned them. Even the religious parties, the MMA, the six party religious alliance, they have actually come out and condemned them. They don't have any supporters in any corner of the country. So
Sure they do. The MMA has been consistently. Maulana Fazlur Rahman, Qazi Hussain Ahmad, you're right, tacitly they have condemned it, but they keep on saying the same thing, that government should not use force.
No. Actually, Maulana Fazlur Rahman, MMA has actually said that these are really Musharraf's, this is just a drama that's been played by Musharraf himself, and these people in Red Mosque are really Musharraf's guys. I mean, they have nothing to do with the religion. So, I mean, I think they're taking a totally different line. But the point is that, yes, this is nobody in Pakistan likes them. There's no, they don't have any support. I mean, the people in the street really hate them for what they're doing, not because they are religious. And the government is in the toughest part because there are a lot of innocent children that can be, really hurt if they take the, and it's a possibility that, I mean, what they're really looked after is they want, I think they're putting Musharraf up to that so that Musharraf can take government can take a strong position, and if they take a military action or the police action, and if like 20 or 30 students get killed, like 15, 16 years old kids, and then they can make it a big deal out of it, and they can create like a scene out of it, and then that would be the beginning of a political.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is the mullahs have been in power in two provinces of the country. They have not delivered anything, and they would like to use something like Chief Justice of the country or the Burqa Brigade to create an issue, and then based on that, try to mobilize their water base. And I think that's what it's all about. But at the end of the day, ultimately, I think that the government should do the right thing, enforce the law, regardless of the political consequences.
Speaking of doing the right thing for us to do now is to move on, unless Nazir has something to add to this.
No,
topic.
Go on, because I can talk about
the
it.
Main, the last two topics have been just the mere warm-up, an aperitif to the main course of tonight, which is to talk about the MQM and Karachi. Shahab, thank you very much for coming on and being willing to put your neck out tonight. Is it accurate to say that you're a supporter of the MQM?
I think supporter is a. If I was in Karachi and I had a choice between voting for MQM that represents the urban Karachiites or voting for Jamaat Islami, which represents the extreme right wing, I would vote for MQM.
But there are more than two parties in Pakistan.
Not in Karachi, not in the district where I live.
So are you sympathetic to MQM?
Yes, I think MQM, I agree with some, I don't agree with all their platform choices, but I do think that they represent some of my feelings.
So tell us, what do they represent in Karachi? What is their politics? What do they represent? What do they stand for?
Yeah, so MQM was started, as we all know, it used to be called Mahajir Qaumi Movement, and it was started because there was a feeling among the ethnic community of Mahajirs that they were not being represented appropriately by the parties that they were electing. It's important to note that Jamaat Islami represented primarily the urban Sindh population of Pakistan before MQM took over and kicked them out of the city. And the problem with the Jamaat Islami
we don't want this to become an indictment of Jamaat Islami. We are talking about MQM.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is the people, urban people of Sindh, felt like when their representative went for Islamabad, they didn't speak for their urban Sindh issue. So MQM was started as a kind of a almost like a ethnic party, and their whole charter was to go to Islamabad and support what at that point were perceived to be the causes of ethnic minority Mahajirs. Now, since then, MQM has transformed. MQM has transformed, has changed its name. It's called Mutahada Qaumi Movement. It has tried to open up, its borders. It has actually outreach to other ethnicities. Actually, has open offices in Punjab. Actually, has some Kashmiris actually that won on MQM tickets, and has tried to broaden its support base just from purely the urban Sindh population.
Now, a little bit of background. Muhajir is the word for listeners who are not Pakistani. Muhajir is the word for migrants from India or their descendants, people who speak Urdu as a first language, such as yourself, such as Assad as well. And here around the table tonight, Shahab is a Muhajir, Assad is a Muhajir, Nazir is a Pathan, and I'm an Irish German American. And the two Muhajirs, I think, can speak to this. You also must have some view on the MQ.
Well, I personally don't really believe in MQM is really based on ethnic politics, and these are the origins of MQM. Now, no matter how you cut it, it's still a baloney. It still is an ethnic party, and I fundamentally don't agree with ethnic politics. I'm a very hardcore believer in Pakistani nationalism, and you can call me a federalist if you want to, if you want to label me that. But I think there is also a practical reason for not liking the ethnic politics. If you look in Pakistan, everybody who has done the ethnic politics has really suffered. Look at our Sindhi. We should learn from our Sindhi brethren. Sindhis initially in Pakistan, they were very much involved in the ethnic politics and with G.M. Sayed and all these people, and Sindh was really suffering. And then they had a great leader, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto, who originated from interior of Sindh, but he did a nationalist politics. And if you look at the total, if you look at the elected prime ministers of the country, Sindh has 3 of the 5 tenures of the elected prime ministers. And that's the advantage. And Sindh has tremendously benefited from the from not investing into ethnic politics, rather in politics. Karachi, when Karachi was actually not under MQM, when Karachi did not really voted so much for the ethnic politician, they were in a very good shape. And for the last 15 years, and I know Shahab would probably disagree with me, Karachi have really suffered tremendously. First of all, they have actually, the Karachi politics has really is not the core politics anymore. It's a peripheral politics. It's just like any other ethnic politics, like a Balochi ethnic politics. And so they can never really have a major share in the national politics.
So also we have heard a lot of your views, and we know you're not very sympathetic to MQM. I would like to take advantage of Shahab's presence here and ask him more questions about MQM. You'll have more chances, I'm sure.
Are you going to ask me about my views as well? Or are you going to ask Shahab also?
Well, we heard your views before in the last show or two, and then I kind of want to ping his and pick up on his brain. And I have a question. Who's the leader of MQM?
The MQM founder was Altaf Hussain, but Altaf Hussain is not an elected, has never chose to go on MQM's elected ticket. So Dr. Farooq Sattar, I believe, would be the most senior elected leader of MQM.
Who runs the party in reality?
I think it's, for all practical purposes, it's the governing committee with Chair being Altaf Hussain.
And Altaf Hussain lives where?
Altaf Hussain today lives in England, just like Nawaz Sharif lives in Dubai and Benazir lives in England. Is Except he that he doesn't have a palace called Surrey Palace, and he actually lives in a small house.
Mm-hmm. Is he a British citizen also?
I believe so.
Why does he live in England?
I think it's because Altaf Hussain has been threatened by I think it's his personal security concerns that do not allow him to come back to Karachi.
Really?
That's what, you know, I'm not close to Altaf Hussain, so I can't tell you his real answer, but based on from what I understand, he's got pending, just like other Pakistani politicians, he's got pending charges against him, and his personal security is not assured if he's in Pakistan.
So sounds like a corrupt leader to me.
How did you arrive to that conclusion?
You said he's got pending charges on him. What are those charges? Did he kill somebody?
So every Pakistani leader.
I'm talking about Altaf Hussain right now.
And I'm talking about Benazir.
We've talked about them before.
But I'm talking about everybody else. So he's just as corrupt.
I just want straight answers and no relation with Benazir.
What you want is my opinion.
Yeah.
And I won't give you that opinion.
I don't want relative opinions. I want straight opinions.
Yeah, I'm giving you my opinion. So he's
corrupt.
Just like any other Pakistani politician. If Benazir, why doesn't Benazir go to Pakistan?
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So we call her corrupt. We call Nawaz Sharif corrupt.
All Pakistani politicians are corrupt.
So Altaf Hussain is corrupt.
What about
Pakistani politicians?
No,
change of subject. Yeah. Who was responsible for the violence in Karachi on May 12th?
So I think that's a good question. I mean, I think if you look at, you know, there is a saying: if you want to find the thief, follow the money. If you think about who's the primary benefactor of the carnage in Karachi, if you think about it from that perspective, MQM is the party that represents Karachi. MQM is also part of the government. So by having a carnage in Karachi, it will never benefit MQM.
Just let me finish. Sure.
It hurts MQM. It also hurts Musharraf. I think the primary benefactors of a carnage in Karachi and political instability are the opposition parties. And so I don't have a proof to say that that's what it is, but I if you look at it from a benefit perspective, MQM and Musharraf were never going to benefit from a carnage in Karachi. It's only the opposition that can benefit from instability in Karachi.
Actually, I challenge your premise, because I think you fundamentally, the premise that you have made is incorrect. MQM was created 15 years ago on ethnic tension between Pathans and Mahajers. And for the last 15 years, MQM has been providing this protection, quote-unquote, to the people of Karachi, to this Urdu-speaking in Karachi, because they have created this whole aura where they say these 2-3-4 million Pathans who live in Karachi is a cosmopolitan city. It's 18 million people population, around 4 million of which are Pathans. And MQM actually created this division between ethnic Mahajers and Pathans. And Pathans are traditionally, they carry guns and they're not everybody who carries a gun is not.
That's your opinion,
violent.
Or who cares, huh?
No. Wait a second. So everybody who carries a gun is not violent person, but they have they traditionally carry a gun, not necessarily that they are violent. And so they have created, MQM has created a scare in Karachi, telling the citizens of Karachi that, hey, we are here to protect you against the Pathans. And actually, they started the ethnic violence in Karachi 15 years ago. And since then, they have been collecting protection money to ordinary citizens of Karachi. Now, they have to keep repeating the same thing every few years. And this was no different. This is a very Machiavellian move from MQM. They've actually targeted the Pathans in this violence in Karachi on 12th of May. They actually specifically targeted Pathans, and they wanted to have an ethnic riot in Karachi again so they can stand up again and portray themselves as the protector of the Mahajir community against the violent Pathans.
So okay, all those things were completely your opinions that are not based on any facts.
If so you, are yours.
Think, if you think about it, I said that was my opinion that the primary benefactors are the Carnegie and Karachi are the opposition.
Which I totally disagree with.
No, because if
because you're right and he's wrong, I suppose.
No, that's just my opinion. But in my opinion, I'm right. That is why I'm stating that opinion.
No, but he says I disagree, and you said no, you're wrong.
Now the original the original portrayal or the original
that's the problem.
The original. Sense that at least the outside world had of the events in Karachi was that it was to do with the Chief Justice's planned visit to Karachi. Now, that's something very different than ethnic politics.
Actually, it has nothing to do with Chief Justice.
No,
I completely disagree
with that. Let me just finish. I think the Chief Justice was brought to Karachi because by the political parties, opposition parties, MMA, PPP, PML, because they knew exactly this is what's going to happen. It just hang on. But the government, and not just the MQM, but the government of Sindh had requested multiple times to Chief Justice that please don't come. If you're going to come, we'll give you a helicopter. You can come on a helicopter. You can go to the court. You can give your address. Instead, he didn't do that. And he didn't do that because this is what this whole plan was around creating a carnage in Karachi. And that's why if you look at some of the political leaders like Imran Khan and Ghazi Hussain Ahmad that are always at the forefront were actually absent from Karachi. It's because they knew this is exactly what's going to happen. See, it's like in Ireland. If you take an ethnic Protestant rally and walk them through an Irish neighborhood, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to be a carnage. It's going to be violence.
There are so
this
many.
This is exactly what the opposition knew was going to happen. This is exactly they planned. And I'm not going to sit here and defend every MQM worker. I'm sure they took some violent actions and they should be persecuted and they
you
should be brought to justice.
You can't defend because they were caught on camera.
But if you look at the pictures of the ANP workers, they were armed to the teeth. They had their Kalashnikovs. They were ready for an armed battle. So it's not like it's a case of just some innocent people walking around and one political party fighting at him. It was actually both parties knew that this was going to happen. They were ready, and the political parties, opposition, wanted to use Karachi to destabilize the country and to destabilize the Musharraf government. And they are the ones, you look at the situation right now, and everybody's blaming NQM, everybody's blaming Musharraf. Political parties got exactly what they want. This was a huge conspiracy,
and
perfectly executed, and it gave them the results that they wanted at the expense of us.
And this is your opinion, right?
This is my opinion.
It's not a fact.
This is my opinion based on how I see the facts.
And there's so many things factually wrong with it and logically wrong with it. For one thing, to begin with, the whole premise that somehow Chief Justice created this is absolutely wrong. Chief Justice's program was to address the Karachi Bar Association. To address the centennial celebration of Karachi Bar Association was actually announced 3 months, even before the whole judicial crisis started.
I think we discussed all that
absolutely
last time, you know?
Right. And it was MQM who said they're going to take out the rally 3 days before Chief Justice was coming, number one. And what kind of logic is that which says, if you don't take a helicopter, we're going to start shooting on the street? What kind of logic is that which says, if you come
what
to the
What kind of logic is that, Shahab?
If the Chief Justice, so I'm not going to sit here and defend anybody that shoots.
No, don't defend, just show your opinion.
Any innocent people. My opinion is that if Chief Justice was only interested in addressing the Bar Council and not interested in petty politics that's built upon the
Imagine for a second that he would take a helicopter.
He would come. He would hop on a helicopter. He would come to the Karachi Bar. He would give his address, and he will go back to Islamabad.
It's up to him to take the aerial route or take the you know.
I'm giving you an example.
This is just a bad example.
When you take a Protestant rally and run them through an Irish neighborhood.
Through a Catholic neighborhood.
A Catholic neighborhood. There is bound to be violence. The opposition knew it. They premeditated it.
So you're saying the Karachi is a no-go area for the Chief Justice?
Because those neighborhoods are not going to change.
You know, so it means Chief Justice can never go to Karachi. Is that what you're saying?
And nobody shot at Chief Justice, actually, from what I understand.
He was not even able to get down.
Yeah.
So otherwise they would have, right?
I can't comment on that.
I don't think anybody would have shot on Chief Justice.
I don't think anybody in their right mind would.
I mean, what an argument you just made. You just made an argument that Karachi is a no-go area for the opposition. Karachi is the no-go area. Just like in Ireland. You just said that like in Ireland, if you go through the protesting neighborhood, they're going to shoot at you.
If you take a if you take 24 women in swimsuits and walk them through the neighborhood in the medieval state of NWFP and walk them through
Wana. Hey, don't call it medieval.
Walk them through Wana. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to attack them.
So you said again.
Don't do that.
Yeah, there you go again. You're saying that don't opposition no. doesn't. It's a no-go. Karachi is a no-go area for Chief Justice. No. For the opposition.
I think both of you guys have very strongly held and interesting views, which we've heard at great length tonight and a great volume as well. I think the two Mohajers must watch the American cable talk shows, I think, because you've learned a lot, I think, from those shows about how to speak, how to shout louder
especially
than the other guy.
Thanks, Musharraf.
Yeah. Especially Bill O'Reilly. By the way, NWF is not as medieval as Interior Sanders.
I was
fishing. Just wanted to make sure.
It was a wrong. Yeah, it was
so I think Bill O'Reilly must be popular in Mohajer neighborhoods in particular.
I mean, Fox News is very popular there. I know that.
So, Shahab, not to preempt Nazir. Nazir may have something else to say as the other host of this show. But I think Shahab, as our guest, should have the opportunity to have the last word.
Yeah. So I think this whole situation is unfortunate. I think anybody, and I'm not going to sit here and defend anybody that shot at innocent people. I think if an MQM worker did that, I think they should be arrested, inquired upon, and brought to justice. Similarly, if an ANP worker did that, we should do the same thing. I think to blanketly blame a party that legitimately represents the urban population of Sindh as perhaps a violent organization or a fascist organization, I think that's just plain wrong. I think there might be some violent elements within that party, just like there are violent elements in every party in Pakistan. So I think it's an unfortunate situation, and what's unfortunate is that the people of Karachi that have been living peacefully for the past 5 to 7 years since Musharraf came in, their peace has been, wrecked for them. There's blood, there's carnage, and all because of a few opportunistic politicians that want to use Chief Justice of Pakistan to destabilize Karachi, to destabilize the country, and reap their petty political rewards.
Well, I mean, I would. It's hard for me to absorb all this, and because MQM has actually refused to hold a judicial
That's
inquiry.
That's not true. Actually, I said I emailed you the Altaf Hussain's
No. He did not
today to ask a judicial inquiry.
No, he is asking his own appointed governor to hold the inquiry.
He's not appointed. He's refusing. He's the governor of Sindh. Who else is he going to ask?
No, he should. There should be judicial inquiry.
Yeah, there should be judicial
headed
inquiry.
By the senior
you
sitting judge
sent,
of
you,
High
you
Court and
him,
Supreme Court.
You sent him an email of a felon who's wanted in Pakistan.
This sure is a long podcast, and I'm not sure if it should get longer or not.
Not today. And I know Pakistanis are full of passion and contradiction at the same time, so we should end this right here, right now. Till next time, Khuda Hafiz.
Thank you.
And special thanks to Assad for his forbearance and being so hospitable to our guest with whom he disagrees.
Right. All right.
نم خسته خسته خارو نشته ده خوده پتولو بانده برده کنا ده هر زخ پل خوندو ناخ پل مزی خوبی خوار ده کنا منم خسته خسته خارو نشته ده خوده پتولو بانده